But I start by saying how much I've enjoyed listening to Coldplay for the last week and a half. It's been great. I was not a, you know, normal user of Coldplay. And for no reason.
I don't know how to. One time you asked me to send you the songs I thought you should listen to. And I just didn't reply. Because it felt strange to try and, I felt like a pusher.
Yeah.
I felt like, you know, he'll come to it when he's ready.
I'm ready. Okay. No, I've totally, it's not any particular group. It's just as you age, you know, you're not interested in new things. You're kind of like, I'm all fine for the Supremes. Give me, you know, and Otis Redding and stuff like that. So you don't want to hear new stuff. But anyway, it's been great. And I've really enjoyed it. And this stuff is great. How did, just let me ask you this. The name Coldplay, I know you were the starfish.
Well, for about 2 minutes, yeah. So we didn't have a name. Our first gig, we were called Starfish for one concert. And then my good friend Tim, who was in a band and would go through band names very, very fast, and he would discard them. And Coldplay, we picked up from him.
So what did Coldplay mean to you?
It just meant us. I don't know if you do this, if you ever think about a word too long, you're like, why is that called a television, and it starts to trip you out a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think, God, my whole life is defined by this Coldplay. But so, I don't think about it anymore. It's just
no, but us. I mean, don't you think that like karma has given you this, there's some reason in the universe that you've been given this name, Coldplay, you chose this name Coldplay.
Yeah.
Does it have any resonance with you on that level?
I think it resonates because I like the fact that it only means us, if you see what I mean.
Uh-huh. But
in the same way that that's called a shoe, we're called Coldplay.
There's a lot of shoes.
No, but that's what it's the name. Uh-huh. There's only that. I can't quite articulate it. If we were called the Flower Pots.
Yeah, you would be.
You'd also think of a flower pot.
Mm-hmm. What was the urge in you to play music? When did that start for you, and where do you think it came from, and then how did it develop in college? I mean, take me to that.
So I was playing...
I just had to start a band.
I was playing a bit up to the age of 10, but not very much. And then when I was 11, I was at a very old-fashioned school, and this teacher came in who was a bit of a maverick in that world, and I had been told before that I wasn't allowed to be musical, really, because I didn't sing in the choir and stuff. And then this guy came in and said, no, everybody's musical, and there was a bunch of these kids' keyboards around the room, and he said, everyone go and mess around. And then something just opened. And at the end of the class, I said, hey, this is what I got. And he was very encouraging. And that's when the little fire started.
In that moment?
In that
when
moment.
When you first touched the keyboards in that class?
Yeah, and then...
what was it? The sound of it?
Yeah, and then I just felt like music was coming through, if I think back. And I didn't know what to do about that for a few years. And then I went to a boarding school, a similar...
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water. Enjoy and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to countrymd.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's countrymd.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Style of school, and the idea of anyone from that world becoming in a band was just completely impossible. I might as well have wanted to be an astronaut or a Martian, you know. So I was having a bit of a rough time around 13, 14, and that's what really lit the fire of like, okay, I gotta make something of myself, you know. It's just hanging out and playing football is not working for me. I got to do something.
What was the rough time?
Did you just that age?
In? You didn't fit in, or just that you were?
I don't think anyone at that age in that kind of environment fits in, and it can be quite hostile.
In a boarding school.
Was it
boarding
school? Yeah, in a boys' boarding. Yeah.
And you didn't fit into the football, rugby guys?
I did a bit, but I don't know, it was just, I was going through some stuff with religion and sexuality and everything, just getting all confused, like most kids at that age. You're like, what is happening? And it can be brutal until you realise, oh, everyone's going through this.
Yeah. And
but anyway, that lit the fire of like, all right, I'm going to just work.
I'll do this as a band.
Yeah, but I still didn't think it was possible.
But you decided I'd work at it.
Yeah, so I would, in the middle of the night, go and play and break into the music room. And
What were the big bands you were listening to then? What were the groups you were listening to then?
Then I had a very strange dual education, triple education. On the one hand, I was listening to a lot of church music because we had to go and sing those hymns every day, which are these beautiful big songs. Then I was into this band called James, all the sort of shoegazing stuff in England in the early 90s.
Early emo kind of.
Yeah, like The Cure and James. And then I was into U2 and REM. And then I was also getting this because this guy in the year above me was obsessed with soul and Motown and rhythm and blues. And he knew that I played the piano. So he said, you're the piano player in my band. He was a very scary kid. He was this big sports guy, like built like a tank, but he was gay and couldn't come out. So he was quite angry. So I was fucking terrified of him. So he said, you're the piano player of my
and
band.
And you had to do it.
And I was like, yes, sir. And he said, play some blues. I said, I don't know what that is.
Oh my.
So he sat me down and showed me the blues and then showed me Otis Redding and Fats Domino and Marvin Gaye and Aretha Franklin. So every day I'm so grateful for that, because there's no way that, this is before YouTube and the internet, there's no way I would have been exposed to that music. So I was getting a big mix of stuff.
So kind of folky stuff.
Yeah.
Plus cathedral stuff.
Yeah.
Plus blues stuff. And gospel.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Well, that's kind of what makes the thing rock and roll, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But just wait, take me from that moment then forward from high school.
So
boarding school.
It's a strange thing to talk about because it's not as gritty or glamorous or edgy as, let's say, Jay-Z's story. In terms of I don't know how to talk about it, particularly in a way that doesn't just seem a bit soft. But to me, it was completely impossible to be able to do this for my life. So I just thought this was this thing that was in me, and I just worked on it. But I never imagined that, you know, even London seemed like Oz, you know?
You don't have a story of the hard, mean streets and, you know, all and the real deprivation and, you know, cruelty and so on. Like, but still, there's an angst and an anger in you and a
drive to an anger, but just as a fire and a, like, I felt like this is what I'm supposed to do, but I'm probably not allowed to do it. And that was an interesting energy, but a good one, because it just reinforced that the thing at the center of everything is just a passion.
Was it a passion for the music?
Yeah.
Or was it a passion also to be a rock star?
I think both, but music mainly, because I didn't think the second one was possible.
So you just, I have music in me, I want to play that.
Yeah.
And I've got to play, and that's all that matters. That's what matters to me.
Yeah.
Stardom, you know, little money. Yeah. Let me ask you a question. You've been making a commercial record for about 20 years, starting about 2000.
19 years, yeah.
So you've made 8 records in that time?
We've just finished our 8th record, yeah.
Why does it take you so long to make a record?
That's a great question. I think we could have made 50 records in that time, but they'd be even worse.
Oh, my God.
We could have.
Is that self-effacing? I mean,
not at all. It's not self-effacing at all.
Well, they're not bad now.
Yeah, but Rolling Stone and us have a checkered history, so I don't know what you might think about. Well, in fact, all journalists and us have a checkered history, and we embrace it and love it. So I don't want to ever assume, like, yeah, we've made 8 masterpieces, and you'll be like, geez, I just gave the new record.
I just read all the reviews. I don't think you have a quarrel with Rolling Stone.
Anyway. No, but sometimes it's good. I remember when we first landed in America to come and do SNL, and I read Rolling Stone review of our single, and it was not good.
Which single?
Our first, Yellow, it was called.
Uh-huh, okay.
But I was like, right, we've got to get better.
Well, that's good. That's helpful.
Yeah.
Well, that's the purpose of criticism, and a lot of it's legitimate. You know, much of it's
sometimes,
legitimate.
You know, listen, I read an amazing book once called The Conscious Ear.
Mm-hmm.
And in it basically said that some people's voices irritate some people's ears.
Uh-huh.
And some people's voices sound good to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely have a voice that some people just like, I don't like this.
Well.
So sometimes you just got to be like, okay, it's not for you, that's fine.
I don't think it's the voice, but...
You see what I mean?
I'm glad this the review of Yellow is constructive and you found a way to use that. I'm very pleased that we did that. But also, it's interesting that you remember that one thing rather than the 30 other times.
I said
you were banned of the year, best this and that, fuck all that nice stuff.
Thank you. But hey, why does it take so long? It's a great thing. I think it's partly to do with how long you tour and to do with... if an album is successful, I think I have a very British thing of like, okay, we should probably go away for a bit rather than keep...
Really?
Yeah.
Some people would say yes, that's a good strategy.
Yeah.
And some people would say these days, particularly, that if you don't start putting in a regular succession of albums, you get out of the public eye and it's hard to come back.
Yeah, and that might be true.
I don't think in your case it's true.
But we'll see. And going back to that thing that I was talking about as a teenager, there's just something in my body which says when something's right and finished.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only happened 8 times, 7. It's only happened 7 times in the last 19 years because once it didn't happen and we still released the album.
Mm-hmm. Which was that?
Our third album called X and Y.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is not quite finished and it's not quite right.
Mm-hmm.
But we got swept up in all these other concerns and...
But they did rather fantastically, didn't it? But they're all.
But how it did is not.
It's the critical review.
How it does is not. No, it's not. It's just that how it feels.
Uh-huh. Well, so how should it feel? I mean, so this starts to answer my question.
Yeah.
To do only 8 in 20 years, which is a low rate of productivity, and you're a prolific songwriter, I presume, and you don't use all of them, obviously.
Yeah, most.
But what is it that feels right? What is it? What's that moment says we've got to start again? And when is that moment when you say,
Okay, I'll try it because I love you, and if this sounds pretentious, forgive me. If the album title is there, in my head and in our head, it's like a picture frame. And it's very clear what fits inside it. So even if there's 15 quite good songs, if they don't fit the picture frame, mm-hmm. they don't come in. So there are a lot of spare things floating around. Not as many as Bruce, you know, who released that 72 tracks. He makes us
look... Every year.
Yeah.
So he likes that many.
It's just a feeling of like, yeah, that picture is finished. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to talk about this album for a moment, about Everyday Life. What is different about it than your previous album?
Well, it's its own world.
Talk about those worlds.
Okay, so I feel that as we go on, and we feel each, as we're getting older as well, each thing we do just has to be like its own little planet. And the aesthetic has to fit, and it has to really come from the heart, and it really, we have to put that concern ahead of any commercial or critical or financial concern. So this one has been bubbling for a while, Everyday Life. Mm-hmm. And between you and me and everyone who's watching, we had to grow a bit of balls to be able to do this one. If you see what I mean? It's the first time that we've really said what we think about some things, and it's trying to be empathetic, and it's a bit unfiltered. It's completely unfiltered. Mm-hmm. So I don't yet know how to talk about it, and this is really the only interview I'm doing, so I better learn fast. Mm-hmm. But it came through, and it's very raw and pure, and that's what it is.
Clearly he's trying to say a lot on this album, and a lot of different things on it, and got a lot of different emotions. Like, let's just, in a certain way, it feels like a concept album.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to ask you before the individual songs, why a concept album or even a two-record...
Double album, yeah.
Double album at a time when people are mainly concentrated on singles, and that's all anybody cares about these days.
Yeah, I know.
Why are you doing that?
Why are we shooting ourselves in the balls?
The bit of the balls.
Because that's what I was told to do.
By inside you.
Yeah.
Or from outside you.
Yeah. The last thing we did was so fun, and we were so grateful. We played to a lot of people in a lot of places, and we did the Super Bowl, and it was amazing. So there was a slight sense of peace of like, okay, all we have to do now is just follow the muse, as it were. And also, I just wanted to sing about other people and how I feel about other people and how I feel about the world right now and everything that's going on. And so it's not really a concept beyond what does every day look like for me and for everybody else.
But what's the world look like? So it's a much outer-directed record.
No, but it's both, because it's trying to put yourself in other people's shoes
But instead of looking at your own particular problems, right off, we're starting to talk about South Africa and Mandela in the first track.
Right.
Second track.
Yes.
But the way it opens is with this full-out, you know,
classical
invocation of church and then a gospel choir.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's throughout the album. There's a lot of churchy stuff.
Yeah.
And cathedral stuff.
Yeah.
And tell me about that.
It's funny. I was speaking to this American singer, songwriter, about so many great American artists come up through gospel, you know, the church. And those chord changes are in the music. Stevie Wonder be a classic example. Like, the chords he uses are, you know, their church, their American church chords. And a lot of the chords and stuff we use, I realize, come from the music that was coming into me before I even registered it. singing it every morning, like.
Well, what you hear a lot of gospel in general music, but what we don't really hear much of these days is cathedral music. I mean, you've got full out, you know, high Anglican choir music in there.
Yeah, there's a choir song, yeah.
And that is your child. That's what you were raised doing, right?
Yeah.
That's what you listened to as a child. Let me ask you something else about that, though. What was your relationship with God and the church then?
Then or now?
Then. As a child and then now.
I've always had a feeling of being part of a much bigger picture. And I was lucky when I was a kid because my mum is from Zimbabwe, so I would go to Zimbabwe a lot and see a very different side of the world. And so that made me realize there's a much bigger story going on than just me. And my relationship with God at that time was very much to see God as a man in the sky with a beard who was quite nice but also quite punitive, and that if you did things wrong, you might risk going and burning for a possibly substantial amount of time, which is terrifying for kids.
And you fully subscribe to that?
Fully. Mm-hmm. Fully, to the point of crazy problems. And then there was a slightly more evangelical side with a more born-again sort of thing.
As a young person?
Yeah, very young person. And in amidst the sort of scariness of it is also a real warmth that comes from a lot of the great prophets, but Jesus included. His pure message was one of like, hey, be nice to other people, treat each other, mm-hmm. you know, look after people. So there was a lot of real beautiful stuff being fed to me, as well as some slightly more terrifying stuff. So for a while, I was like, half of this feels really right and half of it feels really scary. And that was my relationship with God then.
You said born again? It was kind of born again? You went from just kind of ordinary, strict...
Yeah, both. I was both.
...to then having even a larger burst of religion.
Yeah, because both. One in one sort of part of the day and one in another part of the day.
Parts of the day, that's
yeah,
strange.
Meaning like at the schools you go to that, you know, that's very much the...
Standard stuff.
The sort of bedrock.
Of Satan's going to get you. And then at night when you come home?
Well, I was at boarding school, but... Yeah, and then I was into it, like a more evangelical thing.
You
studying
know,
the Bible and everything. Uh-huh.
You shared that with you too. You know that.
And with a lot of people, actually. Well, clearly.
But that was very much at the core of who they were and how they started out and their message and is today. You know, I mean, they're preaching.
So what happened to me was that when I went to boarding school, I walked a bit funny and I bounced a bit. And I was also very homophobic because I was like, if I'm gay, I'm completely fucked for eternity. And I was a kid, like, discovering sexuality and like, what, you know, maybe I'm gay, maybe I'm this, maybe I'm that. I can't be this, so I was terrified. And then I walked a bit funny and I was in a boarding school with a bunch of quite hardcore kids who were also going through their thing. And for a few years, they were very much like, you're definitely gay, and in quite a full-on manner, quite aggressively telling me that. Mm. And it was weird for me for a few years. And then...
Did you think you were gay then?
I don't know. And even if I am, I can't be because it's wrong. It's right? It's wrong.
Uh-huh. So I can't be even on one...
If I am, I can't be. So that was creating a terrible turmoil.
But the thing is, did they convince you that you were probably gay, the kids?
No, they would... I mean, this is like just straight up like, you're
teasing.
Gay. Yeah. But what happened to me about 15...
You started to believe it, though.
I started to worry about it, for sure. About 15 and a half, I don't know what happened, but I was like, yeah, so what? And then it all just stopped overnight. It was very interesting. Once I was like, yeah, so what if I'm gay?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Just a flash.
Yeah, and then it immediately...
What stopped? Your worry or the kids?
The worry and the anyone teasing you and...
Just didn't matter.
Well, yeah, because once I was... I don't know what it was. Maybe it was reading about Elton or...
What was it, do you think?
I don't remember. I really don't remember. Maybe just growing up a bit and having a bit more exposure to the world and thinking, hey, but a lot of my heroes are gay or whatever they are. Doesn't really matter. So what that did was ease a big pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And then made me question, like, hey, maybe some of this stuff that I'm learning about God and everything, I'm not sure if I subscribe to all of this particular religion. So for a few years, that was a bit... Is this very boring?
No, I'm fast.
So for a few years, that was a bit wobbly. And then eventually I just was like, okay, I think I have my own... relationship with what I think God is, and it's not really any one religion for me.
So, and your relationship with God now, because God is throughout this album.
Yeah, for me, God is everything and everybody, and it's love, and it's the miracle in every cell of everything, and the vastness of the mystery, and in your nose, and in my knee, and in this guy's lovely hair.
Your balls.
Thank you, and yeah. It's everybody, and everybody is precious, and everything is here. Everything is part of the grand design.
When you go see Bruce, he's like, you know, he very consciously is giving you a big...
Yeah, well, Bruce is different. Can I talk about Bruce now?
Please.
Okay. So, like we said, our influences keep changing and growing, and now they're all over the place. And I love it, and it can be like a Turkish guitar band and... blah, 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 and the influences come from everywhere. And I'm so grateful for the early influences because, particularly in the case of Radiohead, that gave me permission to do this. So I'm so grateful to them for that. And I love their music. Then just, like, being able to go around the world and listen to everything and hear everyone, and it just all goes in, and it's all incredible. But when Bruce Springsteen came into my life, it was the same as when Rumi, the poet, came into my life. It was like... a fucking life-changing thing. Because Bruce is so good at being Bruce and not really interested in anything else. And he made it and then was like, okay, I've made it. What am I going to do from this position? Rather than, I've made it, let me retire now and have a horse ranch or whatever. Like, what am I going to do with this gift I've been given? And he delivers on it 1,000 times over. He pours everything into it. So when I saw Bruce, I was like, oh, and another guy called Wayne Coyne from the Flaming Lips. It made me feel like, oh, I'm just going to be unashamedly into what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to pour everything into it. And Bruce really only came into my life about 10 years ago. It's like, oh, yeah, some people really don't like what we do, and that's okay. God bless them. There's so many other things to listen to, and why worry about that? And sometimes there's some constructive criticism. And this album may sell this many, and this album may sell... great, and we might win this, we might win that, we might be band of the year, or conversely, worst band of the year. That's great. All this periphery stuff, wonderful. But ultimately, my job, I realise, from seeing Bruce, is to be totally... and unashamedly of service to the people that are listening, or they're at the concert, or they're listening at home, and just to be 100% used by the forces that gave you this gift in the first place.
Just to just be unashamedly you.
Yeah, and just to be used. Like, use
the
me
gift.
Up, universe. Yeah. And that's what I feel with Bruce. I feel like Bruce is just burning so strong mm-hmm. until time says, okay, no, you, mm-hmm. you know?
Did you pick anything up more specific than that from Bruce?
Well, that's...
About a show? Or, I mean, that's more than enough to pick up.
Yeah, but also I love his music. I mean, I first got in through listening to Johnny Cash's Highway Patrolman cover, which I didn't know was by Bruce. Mm-hmm. So then that led me to Nebraska. And I said, this is not what I thought Bruce Springsteen was. And then I had a great friend here in New York who's obsessed with Bruce. And he said, you've got to listen to this, listen to that. So then I went and got into Brilliant Disguise, which I loved. Mm-hmm. And of course, by then Philadelphia was, I was like, oh, there's more to this guy. And then I just went back and Asbury Park and Born to Run. I mean, it just all started feeding mm-hmm. in and looking at his attention to detail and mm-hmm. his, like, no.
He is single-minded.
It's not right until it feels right to
totally,
me.
He is totally single-minded.
Yeah.
He is, and he also is the most careful thinker.
I'm getting
a rigorous fucking
tattoo
thinker.
Of him today.
Really?
After this, yeah.
What
in time for SNL tomorrow, which I guess this is going to air in a few weeks, but.
What's the tattoo of his face?
I have a little funny thing. I'm going to get a thing that says Working on a Dream.
Oh, great.
Which is not a song that many people...
No, but it's wonderful.
But to me, it's like, yeah, that's what great. We're doing.
Are you going to tell him that? I might tell him that.
Well, yeah.
Or you want the surprise.
You tell him. I don't know.
I might talk to him a little.
So...
We met first at Bruce, backstage.
We did, across a crowded room.
Across a crowded room.
And I said, hey, Jan, you said, could you get me a drink, please? And I said, no, I'm a rock star. And you said, yeah, no, you're not.
No, I knew you were a rock star sitting over there, suspicious as to why a member of the press is sitting over here opposite me in the back of the dressing room. Something like, what's he doing there, you know?
No, definitely, yeah.
That was what? Mm.
And at that time, I had a...
Am I in a cool place or not?
I was like, this is the guy that has Us Weekly and Paparazzi and stuff. I was like, I don't know how I feel about this. This is a long time ago.
Yeah.
I now have very different feelings about that whole situation and about you as a person mm-hmm. who I really love.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
But Bruce walked in that time, just getting off the stage, and and then he came over and he jumped on me on the couch and wrestled me down to the couch, like, attack it, you know. Like,
I was like, he must be all right.
Yeah. Well, if he gets that kind of treatment.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on the Stones, by the way?
Oh, yeah. Okay. My thoughts on the Stones are as follows. They are very good. I love the Stones very much. I came to the Stones late as well. Mm. I was in a covers band, another band at school, and they wanted to play... Black Magic Woman and paint it black. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't do it because I felt it was evil. This is when I was very religious. Mm. So I only first saw the Stones in 2012, the first mm-hmm. time I saw them. And since then, I've seen them a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And I would say I'm obsessed with the Stones.
Really?
Yeah.
Good. What part are you obsessed with?
Their shows. And Mick is a front man and... You know, they have such a different... I don't know if they have a different ethos to us or they have... There's just a very different energy, but... I think it's the same thing with Bruce. Mick and... Not just to say Mick, but all of the Stones, including Daryl and including, you know, Chuck and everyone, they're unashamedly themselves. Mm-hmm. That's what it feels like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a frontman who can't really dance... in a traditional manner, mm-hmm. or even in the modern manner, to be given permission to just be yourself, mm-hmm. but fully and go let loose. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm very drawn to those kind of people. Mm-hmm. Beyonce is the same, but she's much more, but I'm equally in awe of her and of Jay, and there's a bunch of people.
What's it like working with those two?
Well, that is just a really a privilege. Mm-hmm. We're so lucky to live in a time when all these kinds of music, we all meet each other, and there aren't really any... There's much less tribalism in music than there used to be. Mm-hmm. And it all melts together more. And as a performer, you know, you can't really compete with Beyoncé.
You've been having an ongoing kind of relationship with these guys for some time now, right? She's been on your record, you've been on theirs, the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Do you have a particularly good personal relationship, particularly special person?
I love them very much.
Do you see them often?
We as much as people who do our job see each other. It tends to be the kind of, those kind of relationships are, when you see each other, it's great. But then you know that you're going to Uganda and you're going to Barbados, whatever.
I saw somewhere you were described as the world's sexiest vegetarian.
Yeah, I think that's wrong on three counts.
Okay, let me guess. Okay. Yeah. What's self-deprecating? Who's the category? Okay.
No, I'd say I'm North London's most hardworking pescatarian.
Okay, so...
Who eats turkey?
Well... okay.
It's less of a glamorous title.
What is being a sex symbol, success, stadium star do to your head? You know, what is that?
You'd have to ask someone else.
All right. And then...
I don't feel like that right now, Jan.
But you don't. I mean, it's...
When I'm doing it,
there's no
like
stadium
that.
Star. I mean, there's only five or six groups in the world like that.
It's a lot of stadiums.
Bruce, you
yeah,
two,
but they're talking
guys.
About groups, but then there's Beyoncé... Uh-huh. There's Eminem, Jay-Z.
That's it?
No, One Direction when they were together.
Oh,
BTS. Keep going. Post Malone could probably do it.
Well.
Ariana could probably do it.
On a consistent basis for the last 20 years.
No, I get what you're saying, and I'm very grateful.
Two decades. You're grateful.
But I'm not in that mode right now.
You're kind of an anti, but you don't, you're kind of an anti-rock star, except for you're extremely discreet.
I don't know what you mean by that.
You keep the card, play your cards close to the vest.
I do,
and you stay out of the way.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
The press and...
I try to.
Why?
Are you talking about paparazzi and stuff?
No, none of that's easy. No.
With that now, with all of that energy now, I just feel, okay, great, you're doing your thing. It's not really my thing, but if you need to do that, then all power to you, and then I'll ask you nicely, hey, is there any way we could go about our day? With press and media, I feel that... don't talk unless spoken to in a strange way. We don't go out looking for it. But I love things like this or...
Well, this is, we're talking, yeah, but...
Or are you talking about more personal life stuff?
Yeah, I'm talking about you keep it to yourself.
Yeah, I
you
do,
know?
I do.
Most other people make some display of it or open about it.
You're
a very private individual.
Yeah, except that all of our songs are very personal, so it's all in there.
Yeah.
But it is, though.
Uh-huh.
Because how could it not be? So... all of the loves and the losses and everything, it's all in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I more subscribe to the Bob Dylan thing of like, don't explain any song,
mm-hmm.
because why ruin someone else's interpretation of it?
Mm-hmm.
But all of our songs are very personal to me and must in some way have been poured through the percolator of our life.
All right, one last question.
Yeah.
You were quoted once saying you wanted to be the biggest band in the world.
Yeah.
Have you done that? I mean, what's... Look, that's well, I would, a, no, I've never heard say that before. That. The Beatles said that.
Yeah.
Bruce has said that. U2 has famously said that. What's that about?
I don't
about?
Care about that thing anymore. I feel like I realize that our job is just to be the best us in the world and exist because we love it and we really love it and reach as many people as want to be reached by making records and by traveling around to see people. And we are the best Coldplay ever.
All right.
You know?
Good.
I can say that without any self-deprecation because it's true. Hey, thanks, man.
Hey.